Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry, tuku ingoa, ko Puke Tāpapa, Puke Wiwi, te maunga, ko te aonga te awa, ko Manukau te whanga. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Kia ora, my name's Julie Ferry. I'm the Deputy Chair of the Puke Tāpapa Local Board and one of five Roscoe Community Voice Reps on that board of Auckland Council, part of the City Vision Centre-Left whānau. I have a regular spot on Red Alert Radio and I'm very keen to get your feedback. You can find me easily on social media, both Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Julie Ferry. That's about F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. Our regular listeners will be familiar with the approach of most of my sessions, exploring the value that a left progressive approach can bring to local government and our communities, in stark contrast with the small C conservative approach, which is about doing as little as possible and charging as small as possible in rates. Progressives aim to work with residents and local groups to get better results for our area than any of us can achieve on our own. So to that end, today I'm talking with Pippa Coombe, who is the chair of the Waitemata Local Board. Pippa was first elected to the local board in 2010 and became chair in 2016, late last year. Pippa worked in corporate law for many years before becoming more and more immersed in sustainability initiatives, particularly around transition towns and cycling advocacy. She's elected on the City Vision ticket, along with me. Thanks for joining us today, Pippa. Great to have you here.
Kia ora, Julie. Good to be here. Thanks for having me along.
First up, why did you first stand for local government? And I think you first stood in 2007?
Well, I actually stood in 2009 for the Auckland Energy Consumer Trust.
Oh, wow.
As an independent, and that was my first kind of foray into politics, although at the time I didn't realise how political it was. I just thought, oh yeah, I'm standing for a trust board. That should be kind of straightforward. But that kind of made me realise the political landscape of Auckland and the kind of the historical boundaries, I guess, of the parties. And it also got me involved in City Vision and realising what City Vision was up to. And then it was kind of a good lead-in to 2010 with the amalgamation and the formation of the Super City and then the opportunity to stand for the first local board, Waitemata Local Board.
Cool. And what sort of tips you over? For a lot of people, they want to make change, but they don't necessarily see local government as a place to do that. So what sort of tipped you over the edge into thinking, I'm gonna put my hand up?
Well, I'd got quite involved in the lead up to the amalgamation. I'd got very involved in community-led development, and there was a lot of concern around that time about what the super city was going to mean for local communities and local decision-making. And as you mentioned, I'd also been involved in transition towns and looking at how communities can be the agents of resilient communities and can actually lead a lot of ideas and initiatives and do good for the community. And so that kind of really gave me an appreciation of the opportunity, I guess, that the Super City presented for getting involved in local issues and actually representing my community, because I'd, through that whole process, got quite involved in issues in the area and kind of wanting to be part of the solution, particularly around future development in Auckland.
So tell us a little bit more about how you came to have that strong interest in sustainability. Is it something you've always had? Is it in your background from your family? Or is it something you've sort of evolved over time?
I think in terms of family background, my mum's always been a very progressive person, and so being involved in issues going back right to when I was a kid and marching against one of the first marches was in the UK against Maggie Thatcher and wow. Campaign for nuclear disarmament, and then coming to New Zealand at around the time of the spring, just after the Springbok tour, and again sort of the nuclear campaign, and so my mum being very kind of involved in the campaign for nuclear disarmament, and so always kind of having an awareness of kind of community of issues, I guess. And then And always been kind of interested in being involved in what's going on in the community. So I've always been a joiner of committees and...
Yeah.
So more recently I came back to New Zealand about just over 10 years ago and really wanted to feel like this was the place that I'd landed and wanted to get involved and was sort of looking for what are my issues going to be and what can I get active in. And that's when Greyland 2030 was being formed around that time, which is a transition town group, and it was all about creating a positive future and responding to climate change and sort of the challenges of moving towards a low carbon community. And also at the same sort of about the same time, I just wanted to be able to ride a bike for transport and thought, this is terrible, the conditions in Auckland. And that kind of got me involved in cycle advocacy, Frocks on Bikes and Cycle Action Auckland, which is now Bike Auckland.
Just cool. And so transition towns, tell us a little bit more about that. Well, and you sort of mentioned it a little bit, but what's the transitioning part?
Well, it's all about that we are going to have to transition to a low carbon. Well, we're going to have to do something around reducing our carbon emissions, and we should really have a target of zero emissions if we're going to sort of stop the catastrophic effects of climate change. And the idea with transition towns is that we have that power within local communities. So if we're looking at the power of community around food production, transport, resilience, social networks, that can all come from community. So the transition idea is that we've got to transition to a low carbon community where we can't rely on fossil fuels forever. And that transition will be easiest where we have all of those sort of local networks and we're doing local food production and local, you know, we can go to local shops and, yeah, we're not reliant on kind of transport networks that take us, you know, huge commutes to work and things. So that's the idea of transition towns. I mean, you see a lot of groups in Auckland are doing transition town kind of thinking, but they might not call themselves transition towns.
Yeah.
So there's lots of groups around, like, say, Earth Action Trust or in the Roskill area or Kaipatiki Project or, you know, they're all doing kind of the basic framework of transition towns. This Greyland chose to sort of tie into that, the same network that comes from the UK.
Cool. And were you involved in one in the UK?
No. It only kind of formed, I think, in the mid-2000s, perhaps.
So you were in with the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Great. And one of the things that people might have noticed up in sort of Greyland and Newmarket and stuff are those signs that tell you how long it takes to bike between particular parts of the community. I think you had something to do with that. Is that right?
Very well observed. Most people don't even see that they're there, even though they're quite, they're kind of quite guerrilla signage in a way because they're like coloured purple and...
They definitely don't fit the AT guidelines of signage.
And that symbol is quite a sort of funky rider. But, yeah, that was one of my first, I guess, cycling-related projects back in the old Auckland City Council day of trying to think about... urban rides, great urban rides, and having a loop network. And it was the sort of same idea. It was about the time of the great rides that are being developed across the country and thinking, right, what are our urban ones going to be? And so we managed to get funding to map out three circuits. And the idea was kind of the infrastructure would follow. That hasn't quite happened. I mean, the signage is still there, but I think, you know, the idea of it was you know, sort of maybe a little bit ahead of its time of hey, we can do these urban rides. But, we still need, I think, the infrastructure needs to go in to support them. I keep expecting Auckland Transport just to kind of quietly take them down and hope that no one notices.
I would notice. No, I often see them and I think actually it's one of the things about cycling that I've really liked is it is actually often a lot faster to get places than I think it is in my head.
Yeah.
So being able to get around locally and that focus of if you are meeting your needs locally, then getting around by bike is often a better option than a car.
Mm.
Never have to find a car park for a start.
Yeah, well, I've just discovered I've actually been lent a car to use and I did a few drives into the local board office last week and I discovered it takes longer than riding my bike.
Yeah, I bet it would.
It's like, oh, this is why I ride my bike.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you're able to empathise with car users there, Pippa.
I'm multimodal, as I like to say. I just, you know, mix it up with different forms of transport.
Yeah.
I drove here today.
Well done, I think. So do you think, though, that Auckland is going in the right direction generally in regard to becoming more sustainable? And in particular, do you think amalgamation has helped with that?
Well, I know there was a lot of concern, like particularly if you were sort of part of Waitakere City Council, you were thinking, oh, you're going to lose that whole eco-city and all of the kind of good local initiatives that were happening. And I don't think, I mean, there's a lot of fear around that, but I don't think that has actually happened. I think the model of the super city has had some good outcomes around allowing for the whole Auckland region to take on a more sort of sustainability focus, but we do have a long way to go really to entrench that. I think we're still kind of taking baby steps in a way. So, just, yeah, we do need to integrate into Auckland Council.
So is there any particular project you're thinking of there for Waitakere that you'd love to steal, as it were? I mean, share.
Well, I think it was the philosophy of being an eco-city. Like, we don't talk about Auckland as being an eco-city anymore.
Yeah.
And if we had that as kind of part of the kaupapa and it was integrated, then there might be a lot that we take a different approach to. And a lot of it is, I mean, there is good stuff happening. We have a chief sustainability officer, which is a whole new thing. And we have commitment to, we've signed up to C40 cities. But we really need to sort of take it to the next level. And I guess a big part of that for me is Auckland Council practicing what it preaches. You know, you don't see that integrated into all levels of council departments and the way we function as an organisation. And then it's only us doing it that we can expect Aucklanders to always also get on board.
So what, tell people a little bit about the C40 cities model. So from recollection, this is about cities across the world who are signing up to say they want to address climate change in particular through dropping emissions and making cities more resilient.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the Chief Sustainability Officer, he's had quite a bit of involvement in that overseas as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think the model of it is it's about recognising that it's cities that can take the leadership role. We don't have to wait for central governments to step up. So cities have got to get in there. I mean, especially when you've seen, you know, with the United States pulling out of the Paris Accord, it's actually the cities that are going to have to lead the way. And so Auckland has joined up with that network and made a made commitments, and particularly focused around one of the big areas is around transport.
Yeah. And one of the things that was great to see after the US pulled out of the Paris Agreement was a lot of cities lit up in green, significant landmark. And in Auckland, that was the Aotea Centre, which looked pretty good in green.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's good to see that political commitment at the city level. And I think also in the US, where the federal structure is so different from what we have here as well, where the idea that you could have cities that lead when they have a lot more, you know, for example, they often run the education systems that you know, are run nationally here, the power and influence that they have. Yeah, so it's interesting to think about Auckland being part of that C40 and sticking to that commitment as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the change that we can actually make, what we can do as a city.
Yeah. And so how do you see that working at a local board level? Because, you know, a lot of people will look at Auckland Council and they'll just think of the mayor, and they might think of then the governing body members, what I personally call the regional councillors. How do you see that at local board level? Because a lot of people think local boards are like community boards and actually don't have much power.
Well, we can do a lot locally, and we were the first board that signed up to have a low carbon community action plan and have definite commitment in our local board plan around having reduction targets. And so that plan is now got implemented just over a year ago, and we've established under that a low carbon network. So that's sort of where we can share ideas. But there's kind of quite a few different focus areas that have come out of that plan. And to even lots of ideas like we've just installed solar charging tables.
Yes, I saw that.
In Arte Square and down at Victoria Park Skate Park. And that's kind of, yeah, I mean, it might be quite a symbolic thing, but it's just trying to change the thinking around how we can use technology and do some placemaking and have, you know, an opportunity to plug into solar. So other things are just how we function as a local board office, you know, how we walking the talk and reducing our, you know, printing paper and ensuring that we've got really good resource recovery in our office.
Do you have a compost bin? Do you have a hungry bin?
I think it's going to the hungry bin. I hope it is. Because so we're doing the compost and then this got actually put in last week. We've got a new person join the team and went, hey, you're not recycling your soft plastics, which we can now do. So we now have put in the office a collection for our soft plastics.
Great.
Right from the very first day of the board, we said, no, we don't want to have plastic water in plastic bottles. And, you know, one of our projects has been to install drinking fountains in all of our park upgrades and on streets where along cycle routes so that people don't have to buy water in plastic bottles.
Yeah, and that's, it used to be standard that every council thing we went to, there were heaps of plastic bottles with water in them, brand new ones.
Yeah.
And I know that I can't remember if it was you or if it was someone else who challenged our local board on that, and I tell you what, they were gone at the next meeting.
Yeah, I mean, those are really, you know, very visible things. Yeah. But I guess the main areas that I think we can have an impact are around transport and around food production, and that's where, you know, we have been able to, the more that we can make it attractive to walk and cycle in our area, the more people can leave the car at home, and that's kind of one of the major contributions to, emissions. So,
yeah.
And that's a particular focus for us.
That's great. And so talking a bit more about the cycling, and I want to note here that, you know, a lot of people have in their heads what's called a mammal, the middle-aged male in Lycra. But actually, you're not a mammal. You're not a middle-aged man. And I can see you're not wearing Lycra today. I don't think I've ever seen you in Lycra. Do you own any Lycra?
I think I'm going to be the last person in Greyland who owns Lycra.
Right.
Exercise pants.
Right. So this is more talking about everyday cycling, not going out and doing 60Ks on the weekend with your head down and your bum up. So what have you always got around by bike? I know your mum's a keen cyclist too, and in that ordinary cycling sense. Was there a point at which you realised it suited your own life better to cycle than to drive?
Well, back in the day, I did used to, when I lived in Ponsonby and I went to Auckland Girls, I used to ride my bike to school, and even then I was probably one of the few girls who actually rode a bike down Ponsonby Road. And then I had a long period of time where I didn't go anywhere near a bicycle. And it was only coming back after living away from Auckland for 20 years and coming back and getting a job in Newmarket, living in Greyland, and thinking, actually, I wanted to just be able to ride a bike to work. It was kind of be able to get some exercise. And that was, you know, 10 years ago or so. And then my partner also, he'd been living in Amsterdam, so he had recently returned from his OE, and he was also wanted just to be able to ride a bike for transport because that's what he'd been doing in Amsterdam. So between the two of us, we just kind of got into riding our bikes for everyday transport. And I guess I've always been very keen of separating myself out from, I really am not a cyclist. I just happen to ride a bike for transport. Just like because I drove a car today, I'm not a motorist. I'm not defined by my transport choice. And I think that's the difference. Like in cities that are very mature around having a lot of people cycling, they don't think of themselves as cyclists. They just happen to ride their bike to work. And you know, they might do walk and mix up their transport.
A bit like how a builder isn't defined by the tool they use the most.
Hmm.
You know, they're not a hammerer or, I don't know, what else do builders use? A screwdriver or they're a builder. It's about what they're doing, not how they do it, the tool that they use to do it.
Yeah, I guess that's one way of good analogy.
So, and I think, you know, Frocks on Bikes has been a really important organisation, I guess, to change that attitude about cycling, that it's not just about Lycra and it's not just about going as far as you can, as fast as you can. It has other purposes. The one of the things that was a bit of an aha moment for me about that stuff was when you spoke at the Suffrage Day event a few years ago about the role that bicycles had for the suffragists in New Zealand when they were getting petition signatures back in the 1890s. Did you want to explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that's quite an amazing history that's but forgotten in a way about how the bicycle was really liberating for women, and particularly in New Zealand, extending the where women could get to and what they could participate in. And so when the petitioning started around the women securing the vote, it was that's how the suffragists were able to travel around collecting petitions, signatures for the petition. And I mean, they got a phenomenal number of signatures. I mean, wasn't it sort of half the women of New Zealand signed?
Something like
that. Incredible numbers. And they wouldn't have been able to achieve that if they hadn't been able to get around by bicycle. So that's, for them, I mean, they didn't think of themselves as cyclists. That's how they were getting around to collect signatures. And so I quite like how there's quite a lot of imagery of the women of that time and Kate Sheppard, you know, with bicycles.
It's pretty, so we're not following their footsteps, we're following their wheel tracks.
And I think it's a good, what's the word, like a barometer of a city's health and well-being is the number of women that are cycling. And and in Auckland we still have this, women are very underrepresented, and I think it's about, you know, women's about 30% of people who are riding bikes are women. And that we will see that change as it becomes safer and there's more opportunities to cycle. And we'll know we have a really good, the city's working really well for everyone when we see more women cycling.
Yeah, and I think for me one of those things is about the safety aspect of it. You know, the perception for that women aren't necessarily safe if they're out at night on their own, which, you know, is just so wrong. Everyone has a right to be safe when they're out at night on their own. And that also links in with public transport use too. You know, that last mile about getting to and from the bus or the train. Well, if you can't do it by walking because that's not safe, maybe cycling is slightly more safe. And so maybe that becomes an option if we can put better infrastructure in at bus stops and train stations for cycling as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're chair now of the Waitematā Local Board after being deputy chair. How do you find the role of chair differs from being a deputy? Just to completely change tack.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very fortunate to have been on the board since 2010 and to have two terms as deputy, and it's been a really good training ground and learning a lot under Shell Chambers, who was the chair for two terms. And now I felt, you know, ready to take on the role of chair and have kind of cleared the decks, and it's pretty much all I do. So it is a full-time job, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to do the role. And I guess the chair, there is an expectation that the chair is full-time and that you're available for a lot more and, you know, can be over everything. And there's always a lot going on, so I really enjoy the role in terms of in representing the central city and central suburbs, because it's a very lively area and a lot going on and a lot of issues. It's been really good.
So some of the there's a structure within that council that most people probably won't be aware of, the Chairs Forum, where all of the chairs from the different local boards get together about, I think it's about once a month, and talk about particularly processes. How do you find participating in that, which was something as deputy chair you, I imagine, you didn't go to very often?
Yeah, well, I really enjoy getting together with all the chairs because you get to sort of hear war stories from right across Auckland, and you get to share ideas. It's not a decision-making forum. I mean, the structure isn't sort of set up that boards come together and make decisions together. But I think it's a really good platform for actually discussing issues and trying to get the best for local boards. Because we do need to sort of share ideas and try and learn from other boards.
Yeah, and it is that tension within the structure between governing body, so the mayor and the ward councillors, and local boards, and the organisation I found often still faces the mayor and the ward councillors as opposed to local boards, even when local boards are often the decision makers. And so the chair's forum's role in giving local boards a little bit more oomph with the organisation, have you found that works?
Yeah, well, I think boards have had to fight kind of every step of the way. And when the structure was set up, there was a lot that boards, it was sort of taken for granted in terms of the roles and responsibilities around boards, but actually that all had to be fought for. It could have been a very different model. And we were very fortunate, I think, that Len Brown was the first mayor, because if we'd had, say, John Banks had been the first mayor, he probably would have tried to disempower local boards a lot more.
Yeah.
And none of that was kind of a requirement. You know, how local boards are operating, a lot of that is just through the culture of the organisation and what has been delegated, rather than a legislative requirement so about how boards operate. So I think, you know, we've really had to fight our corner, and it's good to see a lot of that working.
I think Len Brown actually had a policy on local boards when he ran for mayor back in 2010, which was encouraging that he'd thought about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that he really saw a role for local boards, not just as, you know, sort of a local advocacy organisation, but also as decision makers and power brokers in their own right.
Yeah, and I know people are concerned around how much power do local boards actually have and how much funding do we have, and that's still an ongoing issue.
Great. Well, not great that it's an ongoing issue, but great that you're thinking about it, and I know there's a lot going on in that space at the moment. So thanks so much, Pippa. That was great, and hope to check back in with you in a year or two. So, folks, you can catch this again on the Planet FM website or on our Facebook page. Ka kite anō.
Together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.